What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. The history the government hopes you never learn. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show, hour number three. And joining us on the phone is Layla from Ontario, who's been a frequent caller into the show recently, has impressed a lot of our listeners with her command of history and geopolitics, especially in the Middle East. And so a listener suggested, give her the third hour, which is exactly what we're going to do. And Layla, let's start off basically with a little bit of your history, including your time with the corporate media.
You want to start with when we left Palestine or start from more recent events and work backwards? Which would you prefer?
Well, this is your hour. I was thinking you might go all the way back, you know, to basically where you were born and where you grew up. And, you know, you can make it concise or whatever.
Right. I think I'd like to start with the very concept of Bethlehem itself, since that's been so central to my identification, to my very essence, to my being. And I first started doing my research. For some reason, I'm the only one who used to listen to my father when he would talk about Zionism. And I remember the Syrians and Lebanese, we were the only Palestinians. The Syrians and Lebanese would ridicule him for talking about the Zionists. And recently I got a phone call from someone who was the daughter of one of the families who did that and saying, oh, gee, Esau was right. Israel is just horrible what they're doing, blah, 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 blah. And it took all my willpower not to jump down the phone and say, do you realize how you people made us children feel miserable while you ridiculed our father? I don't want to hear this, but I politely said, yeah, thanks, goodbye. Yes, my father felt very betrayed because a lot of his friends were Jews, and I think he recognized, whether he acknowledged it even to himself, that our ancestry was actually Jewish. Take his name, Esau. Now, rabbis today like to say that the name of Jesse is Ishai, but if you look at the children of Jesse, all of those with the last name of, with the last letters, the suffix of IE, were always pronounced. And the J did not exist then. My contention is that when you have a famous person in your community, you tend to name your children after them. I believe the name of Jesse is actually Isa. And even though Muslims like to say that was the Arabic name for Christ, it was not. It existed long before Arabic came to the region. But anyway, my father was friends with them, and my mother were friends with both Jews living in Palestine and a lot of the Ashkenazim. My father was given an export-import license from the British Mandate, which allowed him to bring things in. So he would bring in gifts for his Jewish friends. I remember he brought in a Persian lamb coat for the wife of one of their friends. And everything was great until they knew the partition was going to occur. And so in 47, just before it was actually going to be voted on in the United Nations, my parents and their Jewish friends left. And we ended up at Ellis Island. When we arrived, ironically, everywhere we went, even though my parents spoke English and wore Western clothing, well, they didn't call us Arabs, they called us dirty Jews. And this is one of the reasons, if Mateus happens to be listening, that I have hard feelings about Canadians. And it's ironic that he referred to me as being racist when I condemned Canada, because first of all, Canada is not a race. It's the first country in the world to have started multiculturalism that seemed to have caught on. But wherever we went, we were called dirty Jews and fleas or DPs. And because of the cost, we ended up living in a small town called Colchester near Windsor, where it was so bad, none of the kids were allowed to talk to us. And I remember once being ganged up by teenage boys on bicycles, and the front tire was bigger than me, and they knocked me down with their front tire. And I just lay there crying, and my sister said, oh, get up, get up. And I refused, and my father came and picked me up and carried me home. And that continued for many years until we moved to Montreal, where it was a more cosmopolitan, sophisticated city, and they were more tolerant. Also, Anglo-Jews and Jews in general were far more influential in Montreal. And as I grew up, ironically, Jews were always befriending me because they thought I was a Jew. Now, maybe I was. Perhaps I didn't even, perhaps there's something about recognizing one's own that one doesn't recognize, because I do think, although I have been critical of Ashkenazim and their claim to being the sole beneficiaries of the land of what they call the Holy Land, there are some who have some legitimate origin, but I think that percentage of their genetics is very small. And many of them probably originate more from the Iranian area. And they would have moved northward into the Khazari region and then moved into Eastern and Central Europe. That would be my guess. And a lot of the research that I've done bears it out. Now, when we lived in Montreal, I used to talk a lot with the older people, the ones who were in their 70s and 80s, who were still mentally competent and had remarkably sharp minds. And I'd ask them what they were told by their oldest ancestor, who still had cognitive abilities that could tell them about what it was like. And what they talked about was the fact that Arabs and Jews were basically nomadic tribes. They were throughout the Arabian Peninsula, and that Aravim referred to what we might call gypsies in the Arabian desert. And there were those who followed Hud, which practiced Judaism. And then there were those who followed Saleh, one of many Islamic prophets. And but still, they would fight with one another. And yet, when it came to doing business, great friends, they would cheat one another quite amicably, because that was part of the game. And then they would have their rivalries and kill one another whenever the opportunity arose. So that was the history that I was told of, and also the fact that Mesopotamia used to be known as Bet Nahren, Nahr being a river, and Bet or Ben Nahren being between two rivers. And of course, this is where the Greeks got their Mesopotamia. So there was, despite all the hostilities, it's like a brotherhood. You fight with your brother one day, but you love him the next day, and then you both fight with one another against your cousin, and then you become jealous of one another, and you fight with one another. So there's also a Middle Eastern culture that was absolutely fascinating. I know when I moved out of home in order to have my independence, because my father always believed, he would say things like, children are not ours, they don't belong to us, they are a gift from God, it's our duty to protect them. And so he would try to restrict my freedom. Well, he's right. As I look back, that's how I look upon my son. The other thing they used to ridicule my father for is when he would try to restrict us from having boyfriends and falling into what he thought would be promiscuity, he would say, "My daughters are the jewels in my crown." And for that reason, in order to preserve our purity, he wanted to return to go to Mexico, Monterrey, where there were a very large community of Telahme, the people of Bethlehem. And I believe the name Telahme originates with the original name Tel Elahem. It's an anachronism. Everyone takes today's Arabic or Hebrew, and of course, modern Hebrew is an absolute fabrication, which has a lot of, especially the Resh. The Resh sound, it comes from the German or the French. I mean, the Re, it was always trilled, as in the Latin or the Greek, and certainly in the Arabic. So we went to Bethlehem, where the idea was to marry the daughters off while they were still pure, because my father believed that was his duty, to deliver his daughters pure to their husbands.
Yes.
And,
okay.
and
yeah, okay. I hate to interrupt. We've actually got a caller on the line who wants to ask you a question, if you're okay with that.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay, Harry in Indiana, welcome to the show, and you have a comment or question for Layla.
Yeah, I'd like to know how Jews give themselves the name Ashkenazi when Ashkenaz was the lineage of Japheth, not Shem.
Actually, Ashkenaz meant from Germany, according to the Hebrew. And Shem, Al-Sham, for example, Syria was always called
Al-Sham. So you're claiming that Germans were of Ashkenaz, is that correct?
Well, they would often refer to the Jews of Europe as being primarily around the area of Ashkenaz.
So it has nothing to do with the racial, Ashkenaz was a human being, but yet you're claiming that Europe, a geographical location, equals a lineage of Ashkenaz. Is that correct?
No, it's not a lineage, but it was a cultural style, because they had adopted a lot of, for example, Yiddish. I assume you know what, you sound like you're probably Jewish, and I assume you know what Yiddish sounds like.
Yeah, I know what Yiddish is. It is a bastardized form of Hebrew and German.
Well, it's not really a bastardized form. It's from the very old German. For example, when the European Jews came to Palestine, they would speak with the ha, 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 very heavy ha. In Arabic, is very soft. There are three ranges for that ha sound. There's the soft hat, as in hat. Then you've got the ha, which is similar to the Germanic ha, as in Bach. Everyone has trouble pronouncing, and that's the intermediate ha. And if you don't learn that very early, anybody can pronounce it if they're taught properly, but if you learn it earlier, it's much easier.
I'm not content with that answer at all.
What is it that you're not content with?
Well, you're telling me that Ashkenaz is Europe. You know, Ashkenaz was a person who was the lineage of Japheth, not Shem, the sons of Noah.
You know what, I'm not going to talk about the Bible. I'm not a rabbi. I'm not a priest.
Jews are claiming to be the lineage of Shem, and then Europe is supposedly,
we are
the lineage of Japheth.
Of Judah. We are the people of Judah. I have many people in my family whose first name or family name is Judah, even though our tribes were not necessarily labeled Judah. There were numerous tribes.
When the Maccabees mixed in with the Edomians? Are you familiar with them?
I know who the Maccabees
Harry, I'm going to ask you to please be civil and, let Layla talk. When you've asked a question, please let her answer.
Yeah, I haven't focused too strongly on the Maccabeans because I believe they were fighting the Hellenes with good reason, because a lot of the people of Judah were very modest and they covered their bodies. And they were horrified when the Hellenes came, and not only did the men walk around naked, they would forgive me for being so graphic, but the only part that was a shame to be exposed was the glands of the male appendage, and they would pull the foreskin and tie it. You will see this in a lot of the Olympic portrayals. I guess you pull the foreskin carefully. And
my eyes are tearing up just imagining that.
You know, during the time of Herod, the Levitical priesthood was no longer in operation. And why the Pharisees were in operation at that time. How can you people
Herod
claim to be Levites when the Jews killed the Levites?
May I tell you what I know about Herod? Herod was an Idumean, and the Idumeans were the remainder of the Nabataeans that moved into Edom.
And Caiaphas was an Idumean who he appointed.
Okay, Harry.
The Pharisees were generally Idumeans. Now, did the Jews have a foreign, were there high priests foreigners?
You know what? Those are the kinds of questions that weren't part of, I wasn't there. And I really don't know.
You're
and
you're telling
said,
me
I'm not a
okay,
Jews
Harry,
are pure
Harry,
people.
Harry, we're going to let you go because one thing that we do demand on this show is civility and politeness. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so getting on back to Layla here, I mean, I don't know what his agenda was, but he basically came off as wanting to attack you and discredit you. And when it comes to religion and history, everybody's got an opinion and nobody really knows what was going on all the way back then as well. So where we left off, your father had taken you and your sister down to this community in, I guess it was Mexico, where there
Monterrey.
Were a lot of... say again?
Monterrey in Nuevo León, just across from Laredo.
Uh-huh.
From Laredo, Texas. A lot of them, and ironically, I hear that a lot of Jews, Judeans, often went to Mexico, and that it was they who first brought. It sounds similar to a swear word that used to exist in Mexico, but cabrito was a meal made from goat, and it was wonderful. But they say that it was the Jews who came to Mexico that brought the goats and made it one of the primary parts of the Mexican cuisine at the time that we were there. Now, one of the nice things that I do remember is in Monterrey, I mean, it was a beautiful city at the time. It was long before it became industrialized. And there was a huge and very wealthy, unfairly wealthy, Telhami community. And basically marriages were always arranged between people. And to be honest, there was an arrangement for me to get married to a man, very wealthy family who lived in León, Guanajuato, which was a very wealthy town in the province of Guanajuato, which had great historic significance. And they were from Bethlehem, but had been in Mexico for a couple of generations. We had thought initially when they invited us to visit them in Mexico, they were interested in my sister, who was older than me. But when we walked across the street, they were very wealthy families. They had huge mansions across the street from each other in the same colonia. And as we were walking across the street, I asked Mother, "So what is it? Do they want Diane?" And she said, "No, they want you." And I said, "What did you tell them?" "Well, we told them you're too young." And their answer was, "Well, does she menstruate?" And the answer was yes. Well, then answer was, "Well, then she's old enough to get married."
For
me, it was a great adventure.
Let's crank the clock forward a little bit here because we are, we only have the rest of the hour. Worked in the corporate.
Yes. Okay. Well, what I wanted to point out is this is the culture that also existed amongst the ancient Judeans. As soon as a girl was capable of being fertile, she was ready for marriage, and the families arranged it.
Given the short lifespans back then, it would almost make sense that as soon as, they're able to reproduce, they should get married and start reproducing, because especially in an agrarian society, children represent a major resource. You know, large families were good. Yeah. You had a lot of kids to do the errands and the chores around the farm and everything. And it wasn't until the modern industrialized age that the idea of limiting population size really began to take hold. So anyway, let's we're coming up on a commercial break here for it's going to be 3 minutes long. When we come on back, I'd like to move the clock forward and hear about your time in the corporate media. So we're going to take a break for some words from our sponsors.
All right.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. We're talking with Layla from Ontario, who's a frequent caller to the show, a very impressive command of history and culture. And before we go on to your corporate career, we have another caller on the line who hopefully will be a little bit more polite and respectful than the last one. Dustin in New Jersey, aloha. Welcome back to the show. And what question do you have for Layla?
Mike, Hi, Justin.
Hi, how are you? Mike, you and Layla, I learned more from you than my entire life in school. Both of you. I mean, it's incredible.
You're fun to listen to. You're great.
Well, Layla, I live in New Jersey, and I live in, you know, Jackson, which is next door to Lake. What's your take on the Hasidics? And they go to Israel, but they don't believe Israel, like, should be there. Is that right? I mean,
go ahead, Layla.
I think the problem is once a country exists, it would be such a horrendous upheaval to try and dismantle it. It's unrealistic and cruel to everybody involved, to both sides, including the Arabs, whether or not they realize it. We have to move forward while we acknowledge the past. We have to move forward. There is a kinship there. There is a culture that is similar. There has been exploitation of, like, the big brother of the little brother, the wealthy part of the family and the less wealthy part. and there's a lot to be given, because a lot of the Palestinians that have been trained in IT and in computer technology are actually being employed by the Israelis, although the Israelis claim it is they take the credit for it. But nonetheless, there already is interaction. If you read Haaretz, you will see that Gideon Levy has always been an advocate of peace. Amira Haas has even gone farther and lives amongst them. There was a man named Uri Avneri who has gone around the world. He was in and spoken about the rights of the Palestinians. There is room for cooperation. They may never be, it'll take generations before the bitterness is forgotten. But that's human history. It's always been like that. Even here in Canada, there was always the ongoing hostility between the French and the English. And that's why multiculturalism was made formal policy in Canada in 1971, because Pierre Trudeau introduced biculturalism, which created hostility. So then he went to multiculturalism, which only complicated the matter further. And then it spread to the U.S. I know I haven't really answered your question. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what can happen. I do know that I've always had Jewish friends and felt a great deal of affinity with them, a great deal of closeness. I can feel their pain. I also feel the pain of the Muslims, the Palestinians. It's very difficult, and that's why I try to dissociate myself from both sides now, because I used to be a very vociferous advocate for Palestinians until I realized it was far more complicated than even I realized. And I had been researching it for years with both living people and with credible sources of written history. And so I just hope for the best. And I hope and pray that there is a power that will help people find a peaceful resolution.
Can I ask you, what for modern day, I want to know, like, we know what Mike's and my takes is on what's going on. What's your take on what's going on with Russia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, you know, modern day of this economic war?
Well, the Saudis, that doesn't surprise me. If anyone knows anything of the history of the nomadic tribes, they were always bitter rivals of one another. They would offer temporary hospitality, but would also kill one another. At the first opportunity, and steal whatever they had, because again, resources were very limited. So fighting was also a thing of honor. If you couldn't fight, then you were useless. It was a very manly thing to do. In fact, even in the Christian culture, which was heavily influenced by the Muslim culture, if the man could not control his wife and children, he wasn't a real man. So violence has always been part of the Middle Eastern culture, whether or not we want to admit it. And the idea of... sorry, go ahead.
No, because I see, you know, like with Saudi Arabia, I see a collaboration between them and Israel, what's going on in Syria. So is it like my enemy and my enemy's my friend? I mean, because the British put both of them in, right? I mean, back in the day. So, I mean, is there still that they're linked together?
Muslims have told me for years, Muslim scholars have said the Saudis never really converted to Islam. They are still Jews. And in fact, there was something in Haaretz not too long ago about finding old synagogues as well as old churches. Remember, Christianity was extremely common in the Arabian Peninsula. In fact, it is said that Muhammad himself was either Christian or Jewish, but the first wife that he had, Khadija, was a Christian. It was her uncle, the bishop, who married them, and she was much older.
Okay, I'm going to have to put this on hold here. We got to take another commercial break. We'll be back in 4 minutes here. So, Layla, please stay on the line, and Dustin, thank you very much. We're going to let you go right now. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just 2 bottles, a 4-month supply. I take Extendivite 3 times a day, every day. I think the supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're still on the line with Layla from Ontario. And Layla, for the rest of the hour, I'd like to talk about two things. First of all, I want to hear about your career in corporate media, what you were doing. I vaguely recall seeing your face on a TV guide cover. And then for the rest of the hour, I want to hear more about what you're thinking as to what's going on today, here, and now. So, Layla, can we start with how did you get into corporate media?
Okay. I would never have gotten into a job as a reporter or an anchor if my husband had not been American. In Canada, when I said I wanted to be a reporter, people would laugh at me because they said that news coming out of a woman's mouth would sound like gossip. And when I did go to CTV offices in Toronto, because I was one of the few who recognized that Montreal would no longer be the economic capital of Canada, and I wanted to move to Toronto. So I went there, and I remember being in the office of one of the top executives, and he picked up the phone and called one of the executive producers of programming and said, "Well, I don't know if she's got new talent, but she's long on looks." I remember being terrified at the But it was okay then in those days. I was, you know, it's like you could pass a woman around like a piece of candy. The same thing happened to me when I worked in advertising. I had great hair, so they wanted me to do shampoo commercials. And my father said, where's your self-respect? And, of course, so I wouldn't do commercials. But anyway, he then referred me to the executive vice president, who ran off a whole bunch of airline tickets and said, come on over for dinner from Montreal. You know, here are some blank tickets. In those days, they would do that. And so then I thought, that's it. So I went to the University of Windsor because I knew there would be no distractions, no parties, no great restaurants, no great discos. And I did a three-year degree in a year and a half. Of course, I already had some credits from my previous efforts. That was where I met my husband. I also got a job at CKLW-TV. I was writing the 11 o'clock newscast from 4 o'clock till midnight, and then I'd go to school during the day, doing poli-sci, communication studies, and economics. And I got, a 3.5 average while working. So when I met my husband, I tried to attract him. He wasn't interested. He said, I don't date students. A year later, after I came back from Israel, suddenly he had a huge interest in me. Only later did I find out why. But anyway, he and I almost broke up at one point because I was one of those Canadians who believed that we Canadians were morally and intellectually superior to the Yankee, the gringo that everyone hated around the world. And my husband and I got into an argument. He said, you Canadians are lacking the guts and the drive that we Americans have. You're lacking the American can-do attitude. It wasn't exactly those words, but that's what he implied. I was so angry, I took my skis and my equipment. I said, that's it, we're breaking up. Well, sure enough, we got back together, got married. He took a sabbatical. He was teaching in the School of Dramatic Art. So he took a sabbatical to Northern Michigan University because he was from the Upper Peninsula. He was born in little old Halbert, where they used to have to hunt for their food, population of 400 people. He was also a gun collector. There was more to him than just that. But although he was of Ojibwe descent, he loved his country more than anything else. When our son was born, he didn't care what I named him. All he wanted was to have him registered as an American. So when we went to the U.S., my first job was with the PBS station as promotion director, and I knew nothing about PBS except what I knew about the ideals of public broadcasting. And they hired me, and the Jehovah's Witness, who was the general manager of WNMU was PBS station licensed to Northern Michigan University. So he just threw me on the air. It was baptism by fire. And I remember one guy saying, you'll never again be as sincere on air as you are now. Although I would argue with him that my sincerity was always there because when I read stuff, I knew what it meant. I wasn't just what I called a seeing eye mouth. The eyes see what's on the teleprompter and the mouth utters it. And there was a very respected broadcaster, his name was Jack Webster, who told me personally, you're one of the only people that I've ever seen reading news whose eyes show that they actually understand the severity of what they're reading.
Well, that does help.
Having had the life experience, I knew something of I didn't actually experience it, but I knew something similar to the things I was talking about. At the same time, I also befriended a Jewish guy who was a part of a peace movement, and he was part of Greenpeace. And his brother, he invited me to a secular Passover at Pesach. And I remember his brother, who was a physician, all of a sudden just burst out into anger because he had worked at Physicians with Border. He said, how can you sit here as a Palestinian when I've been there and I've seen all the Palestinians that have been butchered by Israeli weapons? I said, look, you're a Jew. I'm a Palestinian. What I do not want is to hate anybody. If I'm here with your brother and your guests, it's because I don't want to hate. I want to understand and share our shared the pain that we've both felt for those who have used us for their gain. And he just walked out, and everyone was embarrassed and apologetic. But anyway, that was when I was working for, oh God, I hate to say the name because it was the low point of my career. I was working for the CDC, and I had a great deal of hostility towards me because I had this American experience. And I found the CBC, the editors and the cameramen were top-notch. The people in the newsroom were lazy. They had no interest in actually digging up their own stories. They would get their stories out of yesterday's newspaper. They'd get a clipping, and this is your story for today. This is TV, which is supposed to be so immediate. And they had five people doing the job of one job that was done by the person who was actually on site. My favorite news director in the U.S. once told me, I'll send five people to the same story, and if I don't come back with five different versions, then four people did not do their job, because there's always a great deal of nuances to a story. But yes. That was a remarkable man, Jack Hogan. Everybody admired and respected the man. He actually gave the start to a lot of the people who made it to Network. But anyway, I was spinning my wheels. I left New Orleans for a variety of reasons. The climate didn't agree with me. I had so many allergies, and it was so hard being separated that far. Before then, I'd always kept my jobs within 2 to 3 hours of driving from my husband and son. I would stay either in Lansing, Michigan, which I loved working, or Marquette, where my husband was from. Or my husband was from near there, or I would work in Grand Rapids, which is where I worked for Jack Hogan, and he was an amazing guy. And my news directors in the U.S. were fantastic, and their assistant news directors were wonderful too. They taught me so much. Whereas when I worked briefly in Toronto, the producer of the newscast used to refer to the area where the reporters sat as the gerbil farm. And one day we were walking across the field to a bar, and he grabbed me and kissed me. So I went to the news director and I said, so-and-so is harassing me. He said, that's okay, don't worry. We'll go out tonight and talk about your future. We're going to make you a star. I don't know if you know who Matthew Perry is. His mother, Suzanne Perry, used to be an anchor there. She didn't last very long. So he said, we're going to make you a star. And after we came out from dinner and we were in his car, he made an obscene move on me, and I had met with him to complain about the producer. So he wouldn't accept my resignation, so I sent him a telegram and quit and called my old boss in Grand Rapids, and I said, please help me get back to the U.S. So I went to work in Lansing, where I had a fantastic job. I anchored the noon news, and then I reported on the Capitol in the afternoons for the 6 o'clock news, and it was I loved it. And then, unfortunately, they had scouts that, you know, that would record different people, and I got interview requests from places like Tampa and New Orleans, both of which appealed to me. And my sister lived in Florida, so I should have taken the Tampa job, but New Orleans really appealed to me. There was something about it. I moved there, and it was a great experience. I learned in terms of news. I learned a great deal, but I was doing two news shows a day, the 6 o'clock and the 10 o'clock. I was also expected to do spot news, write for both newscasts. I was also expected to do series for the ratings periods. And then when my brother was murdered in Jamaica in January 86, and I asked for permission to join my parents to go look for my brother's body in Jamaica, my co-anchor, who was harassing me, said, hey, babe, the only death certificate that gets you time off during the sweeps is your own. And when I complained to my bosses about him sexually harassing me, my bosses dragged us up to their office and they said, both of you have got to get along. The ratings depend upon your chemistry. I'll just call him G. You leave Layla alone. G came up and said, well, she's come on to me. And they said, oh, shut up, George.
Yes, they knew. But listen, I want to bring this part of the interview to an end. It's all very fascinating, and I can see. I mean, I saw a lot of this for myself when I worked in entertainment.
Yeah.
But I want to jump forward now to what's going on today certainly between Israel and Palestine, certainly with what's going on with Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey. And so let's start with Israel and Palestine. It looks to me like Israel, especially after reading this article about how concerned they are about Palestinian population growth, I think Israel is considering, if not simply shoving everybody out, all the Palestinians out, of finding some way to limit their population. And that's a very ugly thing. Go ahead.
Paranoid Palestinians have been saying for a long time, for decades, that the Israelis are putting birth control in the water wells of the Arabs. That, of course, is probably not true, since they've continued to reproduce so prolifically. There was also rumors that they had put the typhus bacteria in the Palestinian water wells done by the Mizrahi Jews. That, too, I doubt. There's a lot of paranoia on both sides, fear of the two. What do I think is going to happen? I don't know. I honestly think that there are a lot of Jews and Palestinians who have married one another. There are a lot of them now who actually empathize with one another. And so I have always said, we all know what history is. Rarely has there been a conquering power that has not completely crushed the enemy when they were at the weakest. Israel did not do that. So while I hate to give a great deal, any praise to the IDF, and I think it's ironic they call themselves the Israeli Defense Forces when they're actually the aggressor, but nonetheless, they could have been far more violent than they have been. They have now got Netanyahu, and that's the problem. I think had Rabin lived, things would be different. Even Yitzhak Shamir would have been more willing to compromise. Certainly we know Menachem Begin was. So all of that means that there is an extreme radical element within Israel that will not compromise, and they have a lot of political power right now. However, there are also Maitre d'Karcha, there are a lot of Jews who believe that the Palestinians should have rights, and I do think they will eventually speak up when they realize that it's a matter of their own lives being impacted even more severely than they are now. I do have a small amount of optimism, but I'm terrified that once things go out of control, you just can't. It's like a snowball going down a hill. You can't stop it. And I'm afraid this is where I'm so disappointed with Trump. I had hoped that he might be able to bring some common sense to the whole dispute, but I don't think he's going to. He's just totally. Now there is one other way of looking at his making Jerusalem the capital. That has been a sticking point from the very beginning of the creation of Israel and the United Nations and their very first mediator, Count Folke Bernadotte, who wanted to make both Bethlehem and Jerusalem international zones for the world, because of their significance. He was murdered by, I think it was the Irgun under the orders of, I think it was Yitzhak Shamir, not Menachem Begin. So he was murdered just before he was going to present his plan. So the Jerusalem issue has been there from day one. What Trump may have been thinking is, if he removes that by force, as a negotiating issue, eventually the Palestinians, who have always been forced to swallow what they didn't want to swallow, might actually begin to accept it. And if the Israelis show a willingness to share Jerusalem, even if they do have it as their declared capital, then eventually over time, with the intermingling, and let's face it, human beings being what they are, there's going to be interbreeding. Over time, there may become some kind of resolution. I do know that when I did not live at home in Montreal, and it was a disgrace, I was always told I must come home whenever there was an Arab visitors. The only time I enjoyed coming home was when there were Mizrahi Jews coming to visit because it was so much fun. And there was that commonality amongst the Mizrahis, and that's where I think the hope lies. With the Jews that have lived amongst the Arabs long enough that they are, that they already see that they are basically one people with this political wall standing between them.
Well,
and
it really
I don't
does
know.
Come, yeah, it really does come down to its politics, because we've seen times in history where the Arabs and the Jews got along just fine. You know, everybody live and let live. In fact, when Europe was persecuting the Jews, many of them fled to the Middle East and the Arabs took them on in. Anyway, Leila, we got to take one more commercial break here. We'll be back with the last segment of today's program after these few words.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it. At AROutfitting.com.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354. Or visit MIG911.com.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining what's really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. Last segment of our program today here. And we're finishing up with Layla from Ontario, who is just has this encyclopedic knowledge of ancient religion and events in the Middle East here. And we're finishing up the show talking about, is there the possibility of hope that somehow Israel and Palestine will learn to live with each other? And I'm not as optimistic as you are, certainly because the nation-state law passed by Israel makes it very clear that Israel does not want to share any part of the country with the Palestinians, let alone Jerusalem itself. And this is a very hardline approach. They think it's, you know, ordained by God. You know, everybody has to come to the table and make peace. And one of the things I'm disappointed in Donald Trump about is this so-called great deal that Jared Kushner took on over to the Palestinians, which basically said now that Israel and the United States have cut off all your money and you're all starving to death, we'll send the food and money back on in as long as you give up your right of return. And
that is unacceptable. Yeah, that to me, the very idea of Jared, who has absolutely no qualifications other than the fact that he's a friend of Benjamin Netanyahu and the husband of Donald Trump's daughter, that is an outrage that he would even be appointed to that position. In fact, it's even an outrage that Ivanka is there because she wasn't elected. She isn't qualified either to deal with issues like that. So that is what makes me pessimistic. Without those people being there and without Netanyahu being there, I think there would have been hope. I will tell you this, that despite the fact that I spent most of my life believing myself to be a Palestinian and even a vociferous defender of Palestinian rights, today, if I had to choose, you can live with either Israelis or you can live with Palestinians. I would look for moderate Israelis, and I would choose them over the Palestinians, only because they are more similar to the culture in which I was raised. Even though I know a lot about the Middle Eastern culture, I am still very much a westernized woman, and I would be very comfortable living amongst Israelis. Now, if I feel that way, I suspect there are a lot of women who feel that way. I do know that when I was there in 1986, when I was sent by the TV station in New Orleans to do a series, one of my mother's cousins said, you know, we have to admit that life has been improved a great deal for us since the Israelis have come over. Look at the quality of vegetables and fruits that we have now and the quantity. We never had this before. There are people amongst them who, and it's not just the Christians, I think. I believe there are a lot of Muslims who feel the same way. Because I know Muslims and Israelis collaborate on a lot of research projects, especially on health issues, where both people have genetic conditions.
Okay. Layla, I got to cut you off. We're at the end of the show.
Enjoy the music here.
Okay. Please stay tuned for John Stadmiller. And I'm sure he's got lots of interesting things to share with you. He's going to have a guest who's going to be talking about what's going on down in South Africa. Please take what you learn here and at the whatreallyhappened.com website. Share it with everybody. Keep talking up this affront to the First Amendment we're seeing in social media. So have yourselves a good evening. I got to go check on the hurricane, and we'll be back tomorrow. Aloha, America.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find gain some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.